Hi, I'm Dave McKay from the Lowy Institute. I'm joined by Hal Hill and Arianto Petunru from the Australian National University, who've both spoken at the Indonesia Mini Update, co-hosted by the Lowy Institute and the ANU Indonesia Project. Hal and Arianto, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you both focused today on decentralization, the reforms legislated in Indonesia in 1999 and implemented in 2001 that devolved responsibility for many areas of government to districts in particular, but also to provinces. Now, Hal, I wonder if you could tell me, what impact has decentralization had on development in Indonesia over the past decade?
Well, Indonesia is the world's largest archipelagic state. It has huge diversity in every dimension, economic, social, ethnic, and demographic. For a long time, it was actually a highly centralized state, with power and authority very heavily concentrated in the capital city, Jakarta, especially during the Suharto era. At the end of the Suharto era, there was a recognition that it was, in a sense, overly centralized and needed to be decentralized. In addition, there was some concern at that time about the possibility of territorial disintegration, involving especially Timor, but also problems in other far-flung parts of the country, and notably Papua and Aceh. So the decentralization program was enacted actually at a time of crisis in May 1999 to commence in January 2001. In comparative terms across the world, it's referred to as a Big Bang decentralization, meaning it was done fairly quickly and involving a substantial delegation of administrative and financial authority from the central government to the sub-provincial tiers of government. Indonesia has, of course, central government, provincial governments, of which there are now 35, and about 500 levels of government below the provincial level, that is the Kabupaten and the city level, municipality level. You'd have to say, so it's now 12 years after that was enacted, you'd have to say on balance it was remarkably successful given its origins. Its origins were, you know, it was very hastily done at a time of near crisis. And basically, the country, you know, is still working pretty well, given it's had these major transitions, both out of a crisis and recovery of economic growth, a political transition from authoritarian to democratic rule, and now this fairly radical decentralization. It is basically working fairly well. In terms of overall impacts, it hasn't really had a huge impact on the overall level of economic activity. That is, Indonesia's economy is doing pretty well, and there's still very large differences between the richer and poorer regions. But it has at least enabled there to be much more local participation in decision-making. That's probably the most important achievement, the fact that you've now got this local-level representation with directly elected district assemblies and heads of region. So it's very much work in progress. Still a lot of refining to do. Inevitably, there's toing and froing on how much reform should continue, how much perhaps the power ought to be re-centralised back to the central government. But you have to say, overall, it's a success story, you know, with caveats.
Okay. Yeah, and you mentioned the striking inequality between regions. Has decentralisation affected that at all?
Not much, actually. So, for example, at the provincial level, the richest provinces, and that's mainly Jakarta, the capital city, and a very resource-rich area called East Kalimantan, their income is about 15 or 16 times that of the poorest regions. And the poorer regions are mainly in eastern Indonesia, especially a region called East Nusa Tenggara, the islands nearest to Australia, and also Maluku. That inequality hasn't changed very much over the period. Mm-hmm. Contrary to popular perceptions that there is rising inequality, the inequality levels, as we estimate them, are fairly high, but they're certainly not rising. Mm. In fact, Indonesia in that respect is unlike China, where you've got this widening east-west gap, and also unlike India. So that's another dimension suggesting that the decentralisation reform is working, and contrary to fears at the time of widening inequality, the poor region really falling behind, it has actually maintained a fairly stable sort of a record.
Okay. And, I mean, one of the features of decentralisation, as you mentioned earlier, has been pemekaran, the division of the existing administrative areas into more and more and more. Have we seen different performance between areas that have been divided into new areas and areas that still have the same boundaries that they had back before decentralization occurred?
Well, on that, first of all, on Permakaran, that is quite a serious problem because it's meant that to have a successful federalist system, and Indonesia was not called federal, but effectively it is a federal entity now, to have a successful system, which means that you have well-governed regions being rewarded with, you know, more investment, more jobs, and so on, you need very stable rules of the game between the centre and the regions. And unfortunately, with Permakaran, with this constant splitting off of regions, you don't have very stable arrangements between the centre and the regions. And it's the issue is compounded by the fact that there are strong incentives to actually split off. I mean, in the process of splitting off, the fiscal allocation formulas mean that you do actually get more revenue, and of course you have more control over resources. So the process looks like it's continuing, and the evidence is mixed on whether it's leading to better governance. In aggregate, it's probably not leading to better governance because of this uncertainty. If you're an investor and you're wondering who's going to be, you know, issuing the license next year, you may not know. So it's creating a fair bit of uncertainty. You might say it's letting off steam. That is, local sentiment is now being expressed in the form of, you know, democratic representation at local level. But I think this is a real issue which the incoming administration from 2014 is going to have to address.
Ariane, if I could turn to you. You focused on governance earlier in your paper. Could you take us through some of your key findings on decentralization and governance?
Yeah, the question we wanted to answer basically is how the governance affect the outcome, in this case, economic outcome and social outcome. So we make use of the survey by KPPO, the Original Autonomy Watch, and the ASEA Foundation on local governance. And they have 9 indicators, basically. And this is access to land, governance in business license, interaction between the government and business sectors, business development programs, integrity and capacity of the mayor or the leaders of the districts, transaction costs, infrastructure, security and conflict, and also peraturan daerah or bylaws. And then we wanted to see the impact of all these factors on outcomes. And in addition to that, we also want to see the impact of budget policy or budget allocation, as well as administrative issues. For example, when these districts are created, in other words, Permakaran, or when they are splitting off, and whether or not they are located in Java and Bali and outside Java, Bali, and whether or not they are Kabupaten or Kota Madya. And we found out that actually infrastructure governance is the most important governance indicator. And also following that, transaction costs, and in terms of proliferation, we found some evidence of negative impact actually on HDI growth, so social outcome in terms of human development index. And in terms of economic growth, is actually insignificant. But I think it's interesting to see because you know this splitting or Permakaran occurred in phases in some generations, and we observe that actually the later generation that is 2000 Permakaran compared to the first generation 1999. The later one has actually more negative impact on HDI, meaning when the first phase of splitting occurred in 1999, it basically because of the need at the time, and they found out that they need to be more efficient in administration and so forth. But eventually, some local government officials learned that actually if you split, you get more money.
Okay.
So that's actually creating some kind of moral hazard, probably. Of course, we need to study more deeply, but we found some evidence that the later Permakaran actually is worse than the first generation.
Than the first one. I mean, I don't know if the survey looked at corruption at all, but do we see, when you talk about governance, do we see different levels of corruption in areas where there's been Permakaran and areas where there hasn't?
Well, that's interesting because one of these sub-indexes actually capture the corruption because actually it asks the respondent whether or not they agree that their leaders are corrupt.
Mm.
So there is this sub-index called integrity or capacity of the leader, mayor or bupati. Interestingly, we found out that actually the constituent or the respondent, which is mainly the business representative, they're more concerned of infrastructure rather than whether or not the leaders are corrupt.
Okay.
So again, this gives support or evidence that the role of infrastructure is really important. And in addition to infrastructure, the other sub-index that is also important is transaction cost. So both infrastructure, physical infrastructure and transaction cost, these are actually logistic costs.
Okay.
And again, provide support to previous studies about the importance of logistic cost connectivity in Indonesia.
And what has been the effect of decentralization on logistic costs?
Well, in terms of logistic cost and decentralization, I think this relates to budget. Mm. Budget is budget policy, because another elements of our models of our study is looking at the budget allocation, and it almost uniformly the portion given or allocated towards development expenditure is belittled by the portion given to personnel expenditure as a share of the total expenditure. So basically, the allocation for building a broad infrastructure is so small, and even so, these are mostly dependent upon the central allocation, because the ratio between transfer and local PAD or locally generated revenue is almost 90-10, right? And in the 90% transfer from central government mostly are used for personnel, so to pay the government officials. So I think this is problematic. And in terms of building logistic or in connectivity, I think more concern have to be given for this allocation, including the formula for central and local budget transfer, as well as to make sure that actually the use is more on towards development expenditure, including road and everything, rather than personnel expenditure.
Okay. A final question. We've now had 12 years of decentralization. You see talk in Indonesia of revisiting the overall design of decentralization or making changes. Do you think that's a good idea? And what changes would you make if it were up to you?
I think it's a good idea. You know, the comparison is always if we have to go back to the authoritarian structure, and I don't think that's a good idea. I mean, decentralization is a good idea. Of course, there are some weaknesses and we have to work on that. And for example, just to take one example, the proliferation. As I said, as I mentioned earlier, there's been some kind of moral hazard in terms of using the incentive to split just because you will get more budget, but then the budget is mostly for other to use other than development. So I think what we should do is to refine or even to make sure that the regulation is being followed and to refine the existing regulation. For example, in the new draft decentralization law, new revision, there's a clause to strengthen or the requirement to proliferation or pemekaran to make it tighter. So as you know, like every day now we hear there is another pemekaran and here and there. So I think we should work on improving the existing laws and regulations.
Hal, any final comments for you on the design of decentralization and the possibility of making changes?
No, I think we need a sense of historical perspective. So at the time in 1998-1999, things were really gloomy in Indonesia, both economically and also politically. And I mean, Indonesia has, in a sense, defied all the gloomy predictions, both on the economy and its political transition, which has been remarkably successful. And I think you'd make the same comment about decentralization. It looked at the time as though it was done very hastily without adequate preparation. But in fact, it's working. So I think, as Dr. Petunru says, it's really now about fine-tuning, and the fine-tuning measures include, for example, stopping this splitting off and fragmentation of administrations, having much more stable and predictable financial flows and administrative authority. Central government's still got to let go of more things which is supposed to have been allocated but haven't really been allocated. So it's about fine-tuning, not about radical change. As Dr. Petunru says, no going back.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hal Hill and Arianto Petunru, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.